For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board-certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Last week, we did an encore episode. I took a week off, but this week we are back. And this week we're going to do something a little different. Instead of a solo episode or instead of an interview, I actually pulled 8 questions off of our app. So if you didn't know, the Autism Helper has an app. Yeah, search us in the App Store. Search the Autism Helper anywhere you find your apps. If you're not an Apple user, I don't really know. Are your things still called apps? They're probably still called apps, but search the Autism Helper. We're available on any type of device. And the Autism Helper app is available for anyone. It's where we house all of our courses and the professional development membership. But if you're not in any of those things, you can still download our app and you have access to any of our free events like webinars, things like that. And our feed. The feed is really cool because it's like a professional Facebook feed. Like, you know, think, you know, the Facebook feed without your annoying aunt's cat memes. So if you have any questions, you want to troubleshoot, you want to find out like why something's happening or just connect with someone from the Autism Helper team, that's where you go. It's all in one spot. And people ask some really awesome questions. So for today's episode, I actually went back through the Autism Helper app the last few weeks and pulled some different questions that I thought I could talk about on the podcast. So if you've never downloaded the app, definitely check it out. If you've never asked a question on the app feed, ask a question because people are in there. I love seeing what other people comment on the questions, and I love seeing the discussions. You know, this can be such an isolating job. I always say how we're on special ed island. We're like the only special ed teacher in the building or in the hallway. So having the Autism Helper app to be able to connect with other high school special ed teachers or other self-contained elementary teachers can be so valuable to really have that collaboration that we don't get in our buildings. So I'm going to ease into this episode with an easy question. And actually, this question, though, gets asked a lot. And it's kind of a logistical question, and I have like a very strong opinion on it. So this question is, hello, I have a question about the weekly matching independent workbooks. Do you use cardstock or regular printing paper when you laminate? So these are some of the most heated responses I get whenever I talk about like laminating and prep and do we cut before we laminate or not cut? Like the most, you know, vigorous responses I get on social media are about things like this because people have strong opinions on this, myself included. When you laminate anything, you don't want to use cardstock. And it's, I understand why this would be confusing because you want things to like be heavy duty. You think I'm going to get cardstock and then I'm going to laminate it. It's going to be so strong, right? But if you laminate cardstock, it's hard for that lamination, I have found, to stick, right? And as you guys know, I laminate first and cut second. I don't pre-cut. I know. Very, very controversial. The most controversial thing I can say on the podcast is I don't pre-cut my laminating. So, especially since I don't pre-cut, you really can't use cardstock. So I use regular printing paper, laminate, and then cut out. Now, if you use a good laminator, not like a big school one that's like real cheapy, if you use a good laminator, which those are like $130, they'll last you a long time, use it at home, then you will be totally fine cutting after. I promise. I've done like so many videos about this. It's maybe weird. Like people that are not in this space like would like die to know how many videos I've made about like the logistics of lamination. So for anything weekly matching workbooks included, I use regular printing paper, laminate, and then cut after. All right, question number two. We have a student who engages in physical aggression when denied access to the stage during lunch in the cafeteria. How can we shape his behavior and provide a functional equivalent? So just to note, I have a lot of behavior questions coming. I'm going to go ahead and take some liberties with answering them because I know people want to kind of hear, like, what would you do, right? I am not this child's BCBA. I am not giving clinical advice. I ethically can't do that. I don't know that child. So this is going to be hypothetical, right? Like, I'm going to be like, if this child did this, I don't know this kid, I would have to do an FBA. I would have to observe that. So let's just like give that context for all of the behavior questions. So let's paint the picture here. We have lunch in the cafeteria. There's also the auditorium. There's a stage, right? Who doesn't want to be on a stage? First of all, love this kid already. Like, love this kid. He wants to be on stage. Let's give him opportunities to be on stage, right? Maybe before lunch, he can go be on stage for a minute, like before everyone gets in there. Like, you go take him in there a few minutes before and he gets to be on stage. Maybe he's working for being on stage after. There's a lot of ways that we could look at what this is. There's probably something about that stage. It's probably not just attention, I would assume. Like, it's something about the stage, the microphone. It might be the stage with an empty room. It might be the stage with the full cafeteria. I would play around with that. But I think there's a lot of ways that you could look at giving him access to the stage prior to lunch, after lunch. I think if physical aggression really is taking over, then maybe take a break with, you know, having lunch there for a little bit and come back. And have lunch in the classroom. But if the alternative is like, we just have a short break on the stage at the end of lunch period and we remove physical aggression, I feel like okay with that, you know, me. But again, the logistics of the school day play a big role. How much staff do we have? What happens in the lunch room right after, right? Is there another lunch period? I think sometimes, and again, speaking broadly without knowing the situation, I think sometimes outside BCBAs struggle with situations like this that don't understand the logistics of a school. Like, just let him go on the stage. Well, you know, sometimes that's easier said than done because like their lunches are back to back. So like he can't just be on stage for 15 minutes right after if like another lunch is coming in or what's happening. And like physical aggression, especially in somewhere like a lunchroom, becomes such an immediate safety issue right away that's going to really take precedence in this conversation on what we are doing to avoid that. So I would obviously do a thorough FBA, figure out what role attention plays versus the stage. But I would really look at like some non-contingent reinforcement with this. Like, can we go to the stage throughout the morning? Like, can we have some stage breaks? Like, let's go to the stage like at 10:30, at 11:20, so that by the time we're at lunch at 11:45, like he's already had some time on that stage. And maybe he's like working for a stage break for later. That's kind of where I would start there in a little snapshot. All right, question number three. Hello, looking for ideas for an IEP goal for a nonverbal student who has autism. My goal for the student is to work on functional reading skills in various settings. How do I write this goal? Thank you. Again, short, brief question without knowing a lot about the student. So if we're looking at functional reading skills, you know me. I love literacy, love functional literacy. I would check out the functional literacy curriculum. And whether you use that curriculum or not, just look at the idea of it. Like, look at the preview, like look at the video, because that to me was like thinking about text in the real world was really the inspiration for that whole curriculum, because there's so much text that we consume every single day when we walk around the community, when we walk around our house, that we don't even realize. Like when you go to Starbucks, you're, you know, consuming, which is the bathroom sign, which is the door, which is the menu, which is, you know, when you get your pickup order, it's sectioned into like letters of the alphabet for your last name. There's so much, you know, literacy and language and that we are consuming constantly. And that's kind of what you want to focus on when it comes to functional reading. You want to think about what are your goals for that child, especially if you're thinking high school transition. You want to start thinking about job opportunities, vocational opportunities, and what do they need there? So I want to talk for a second about vocational opportunities and thinking backwards, like backwards planning. So Will's Place is my aunt's nonprofit cafe that employs adults with disabilities, and my brother is the front of house manager, and we talk a lot about functional literacy and what the employees there are doing and what skills they need, right? And not all of the employees have strong literacy skills, but we talk about what functional literacy looks like. Can, you know, one of the employees look at the menu and match one of the names of the sandwiches to the exact name on the POS, and when someone points to the menu, find that word on the POS? Like, that's still a literacy skill. They might not be able to read that word, but they can match that word in the POS when someone's ordering. And then when the receipt is printed in the kitchen, can they match that to the visual menu in the back to then prep that sandwich? All of those are functional reading skills, matching those words. So now if we're thinking back, like, okay, this is where maybe I want, if we were to like think in the future, like I want this kid, you know, pre-adult teenager to have this type of job. Okay, we know he has to match words, and he's going to have to match words out of a big field. When someone's ordering from a menu, there's a lot of words. And when they're on the POS ordering system, there's a lot of words on there. So let's look at matching words out of a field of 10. So like starting to like, in that example, think of what the job would require and plan backwards from there. So that's where I would go with that goal. And then, you know, write that great SMART IEP goal with all of that strong, robust mastery criteria. As a busy working mom, I find it really hard to prioritize eating healthy. I don't always have time to prep healthy meals, and I end up snacking all day. That wasn't until I found Factor Meals. I've been doing Factor Meals for about a year and a half, and I absolutely love it for healthy, ready-to-go lunches. What I love about Factor is they're ready to go. You pop it in the microwave, 2 minutes later, there is a hot, delicious, and healthy meal. My favorite is the taco bowls. I love how many options there are. Every week, I pick out what I'm gonna get, and I always look forward to that box arriving because I know it's gonna be something new and something that is super yummy. I think Factor Meals would be awesome for teachers because teachers have the shortest lunch breaks ever. So having something that's ready to go in 2 minutes is so key. So eat smart with Factor. You can get started at factormeals.com/Sasha50off and use code FACTORPODCAST. So again, head over to factormeals.com/Sasha50off with code FACTORPODCAST and enjoy a warm, healthy, delicious lunch during that super short lunch break.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Yeah. All right, question number 4. I like this one. I'm leading a professional development session mid-February with our licensed staff in my district. Any suggestions for topics that might be timely at that time? Targeted time would be 60 to 90 minutes. Asking my staff for input as well. Love this question. And love this. Like, And I think this can apply to any of you. Like if you are a special ed teacher and you're like, oh, this isn't me. I wouldn't want to run a PD session. Yeah, you can. And like, not to push you, but like you should ask your principal, be like, hey, can I just have 15 minutes at the next PD day? And if you're like, gosh, what would I do with 15 minutes? I have a PowerPoint that I've already made for you. I'll drop the blog post in the show notes. That's just a really simple PowerPoint on like, what is autism? What is, what are special ed services? What is an IEP? Even just something simple as that to discuss this with your whole school community is such an important introduction. Having those conversations can help create such a better school culture for your students. I had a whole podcast episode on this like years and years ago because now we're at episode, 300 something. I did this within the first 20 podcast episode. Within the first 20 episodes I did an episode called like, you are your student's publicist. And you are. You are your classroom's publicist. And you have to spread good PR about your students. And part of that is doing things like leading trainings and talking about like, what are the rights and safeguards of your students? What is an IEP? And why do you have more staff in your classrooms? Because I guarantee you, there are teachers in your building that are like, why does she get two paraprofessionals? That's not fair. Explain that to them, right? Like, hey, I'm actually short-staffed. Thanks for asking, Linda, right? So having that opportunity to train, whether it's for 15 minutes or 60 to 90 minutes, like this question is so valuable for your students because it creates a better community for your students. And it's, you know, if you're not someone that, you know, enjoys or likes public speaking, to put it lightly, this can feel intimidating. Do it with a friend, you know, do it with your SLP, your case manager, do it with two special ed teachers so it doesn't feel intimidating. For 60 to 90 minutes, that's like a big chunk of time, which is awesome. With that chunk of time with your staff, I would get into behavior. I mean, most of my job right now is training. I train 3 to 4 times a week. That's usually my summer. My summer schedule is 3 to 4 times a week. The rest of the year is probably 1 to 2 times. And 80%, that's just a real random number I just pulled. But I would estimate 80% of my time training is talking about behavior. I would talk about functions of behavior. I talk about reinforcement. Like these are not special ed autism topics. These are just, this is how human behavior works. This is why we do what we do. So I would get into that personally. That's what I would do. But I love that question. All right, question number 5. This is a good question. This is a hard one. Hello, Sasha. I need a little help with behavior rubrics for tolerating denied access. I have 2 nonverbal first grade students who cannot tolerate denied access and resort to property destruction and loud crying, which overstimulates other students in the classroom. Thank you. So lots to unpack here. First of all, love that we're starting with a behavior rubric. So we'll get to that at the end. But tolerating denied access and then kind of this leading to a bigger behavior. So we're talking about like something small that leads to a situation of escalation and then overstimulating other students. So a lot in there. First, let's go to the denied access. I have a YouTube video I'm going to link in the show notes. I've talked a lot about denied access. Let's acknowledge like it's hard being told no, right? Let's also acknowledge that at grade 1, being told no and like not loving that is 1000% developmentally normal. I have a neurotypical first grader and this morning I told her no and she was furious with me and lost her mind. Developmentally normal, right? Now, engaging in property destruction and then this causing an issue with the whole class, we don't love that, right? So, denied access. We're going to be told no sometimes. We want to prep for this ahead of time. We want to get ahead of this. We do not want kids that like are told no for something they want and are like robotic and like, great, thank you. I didn't want it anyways. Like, we can be upset. We can be bummed. It's what we do with like being upset and being bummed. This is emotional regulation. This is why we are here with first graders doing the hard stuff. This makes resilient teenagers. This makes independent adults. This is where the work happens. So those of you that are like in the trenches, like in a power struggle and like fighting the good fight here with first graders, like every day, like about this stuff, like this is where it happens. Like helping them sit with their feelings. Like it's going to be okay to be upset when you are told no. And that's okay. And we're not going to tell them that they shouldn't be upset, because they can be upset. When you have to get up off YouTube, it stinks. I get it. When I have to turn off Real Housewives, I don't want to. I don't want to turn it off. I love it. I can watch it all day. I don't want to turn it off. But sometimes you got to do the laundry, right? So let's get to denied access. We want something. We hear no. We want to first, before we get to even that situation, we want to practice. That's how emotional regulation builds, in pre-regulation. So we prep for it. That, like, we prep for the big hard emotions of anger, frustration. What do those look like? What do those feel like? What do we do with that? We practice coping skills. We practice taking deep breaths. We practice taking a walk. We practice taking a sit, right? We have the visuals out. We're going through the choice making. We're ready. So then when they're like, hey, can I go on the iPad right now? And you're like, no, not right now. And they're frustrated. We're like, okay, remember, we're going to get our choice board. We're going to, you know, oh, I see. We're ready to name it, to name the emotion. Oh, I see it. It seems like you're a little frustrated. Can we pick a way we can calm down? We're giving them a choice. We're giving them a visual, helping them name the emotion. And then we're going to give them some space, right? Not saying like, no, you shouldn't be upset about not having the iPad. You had the iPad yesterday. We're not dismissing the feeling. We're allowing that feeling. And then stepping back a minute, right? We also can give the, like, not now, but we can when. So we can't have the iPad now. We can have the iPad after recess. We can have the iPad after centers. And now here she mentions two nonverbal first graders. So I'm going to infer we're going to have some low receptive language. So I might hear in this situation be like, okay, no iPad now. I might have a visual that says no iPad across over the iPad. And then I might on their visual schedule take an iPad icon and put it right on the schedule, like where they're going to have it. Like, you get iPad, you know, after gym. And I might point to where that is. And if they fall to the floor crying, I might pull out that visual that I said of like, I'm frustrated and I have three choices for calm down. What do we want to do next? I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to model calm. I'm going to be on their level, right? I'm going to keep the environment chill, because again, the other problem here was overstimulating the other students as much as possible. So big question there. The last piece of this was the behavior rubric. So with the behavior rubric, with this kind of situation, I might actually look at magnitude of behaviors. So because there's like this property destruction and crying, like, it kind of sounds like this quote unquote meltdown. There's a lot in here. I might write out a definition of like the different stages of this, like stage one, stage two, stage three. So like a low level, mid level, high level, and like look at the magnitude. And then I would track like, okay, you know, today this happened and the magnitude was a one versus a two versus a three. And then I would be able, it would almost be like a cross between a rubric and ABC data, because I'd be like, I'd want to kind of know like, all right, he was told no to the iPad and he had like a level one. And then he was told no to extra applesauce at lunch and it was a level three. So that's kind of, I think, how I would like do this rubric. I'd also want that like ABC component as well. Okay, another behavior question. We got a lot of behavior questions. I hope this is like a little bit inspiring people to come to the app, because there's a lot of good questions. Inquiring about techniques to support students who pinch and scream when frustrated or when trying to avoid demands. Is there a scripted phrase you would recommend, perhaps an effective strategy that you have implemented to address these types of behaviors? Right now, planned ignoring techniques was working. However, screaming has escalated. Any recommendations are truly appreciated. Again, context, and to preface this, I don't know this kid. I don't know this. So this is purely hypothetical. This is like a made up, pretend this is like a made up student in my head, because I'm not giving behavior. I'm not the BCBA. I'm not giving my advice to this child. I'm giving my advice to this type of situation, right? So child that is pinching and screaming to avoid demand. So we're looking potentially at an escape behavior. Is there a scripted phrase you would recommend? So let's answer the first question. No, there isn't. And I do understand the motivation to ask this question, because we all kind of want the magic wand, right? And there's no judgment on wanting the magic wand, right? I get literally some version of this question probably every day in some way. Like, do you have a product that does this, or a phrase that does this, or what download does this? And it's just not that simple, guys. Like, I mean, if it was easy, it would have been done. Like, it's a process. Like, that's why I spend most of my time doing full and half day trainings on behavior. That's why we have 3 full day behavior courses, because it's a process. We got to figure out what's going on. And you want to think about this kid. If this kid is so frustrated, so upset, that their only way to communicate what they want and need is to pinch or scream, that's all they've got. We don't have a quick solution to fix that. We've got to do the work to figure out what's happening in order to make some progress or find a solution. There's not a quick, you know, scripted phrase or one social story for this, right?
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So, is there an effective strategy that you have implemented to address these types of behaviors? In general, the effective strategy, insert any type of problem behavior, is going to be figure out why the problem behavior is happening and give a new, positive, pro-social behavior to give them access to that same why. So, if they're trying to get out of work, give them a replacement behavior that will get them out of work. So here, and I'm gonna make some inferences. And if this was your question and you happen to be listening, like, again, this is like literally no judgment. Maybe you're doing all of these things and that's great. So I'm using planned ignoring. So I get asked about planned ignoring a lot. And my first question about planned ignoring is always like, cool, what's the replacement behavior that you're teaching alongside planned ignoring? Planned ignoring is like a complex thing only because if it's not used correctly, and if it's not used alongside teaching the replacement behavior, yeah, it's horrible. Like, you know what I mean? Like when I talk about planned ignoring or like show anything that references planned ignoring on like TikTok, like I get like chewed up and spit out. Like, and I get it because like on the surface, it's horrible. But like if you utilize the idea at the core of planned ignoring makes sense when you utilize it with teaching a replacement behavior. Like, let's not give attention to a negative behavior, but let's give attention to the positive behaviors. But the problem is then, the people are like, well, they're not doing any positive behaviors that for me to give attention to. Well, you have to give what they want for the positive behavior. And here, in this situation I see a lot, with the escape and avoidance, when kids ask, like, say, they do the replacement behavior. Like, give me a break. Let me not do the work. I don't want to do the work. They push the work away. That's a replacement behavior. Pushing the work away can be a replacement behavior. Pushing the work away is better and a more positive response than pinching. Pushing the work away is not reinforced. It's not. We push it right back at them. Do your work. So what do? They go back to what works. They pinch, right? Because we're not providing a response that we're reinforcing with what they want, which is getting out of work. Now, let's look at the other side of it. You're like, well, they got to do some work. They're in school. Like, so this is like not an answer I can answer quickly in a podcast, but go to the positive behavior change course. You have to, for some period of time, give them what they want all the time, meaning they got to get out of work all the time. Every time they say, give me a break, or let me take a break, or, you know, I don't want to do that. You're like, cool, don't. Go take a break. I don't know. You're like, oh my God, no, I can't do that. Like, but you can, you can, like, for a few days, like, it's fine. Like, you have to get buy-in on the replacement behaviors. And that is like the biggest, biggest problem that I see with most behavior plans with really complex extreme behaviors is we don't have a replacement behavior, or we are not reinforcing the replacement behavior with like enough magnitude where the student has buy-in and the problem behavior is reinforced. So in such an extreme way, because it's an extreme behavior, we have to. So that's really usually the disconnect, is the reinforcement for the replacement behavior. So if you want more on that, definitely check out Positive Behavior Change course. All right, on to question number 7. I'm just wondering if you ever do training videos for staff PD. I would love to see a video on staff's responsibility during group learning. Should they be positioning, prompting, redirecting students, letting the teacher lead, etc.? So I don't specifically have a video on that. In the professional development membership, there's a lot. I really encourage all of those videos to be used for staff training, and I really teach members how to use videos for staff training in certain ways, like use these videos for this, and there's worksheets for that and things like that. As far as during group learning, because that's so particular to your students in your group, instead, I would use behavior skills training and I would do a lot of modeling. Like, I would be like, hey, Miss Thomas, like, I'm going to be you today and I'm going to do exactly what I would want you to do for this whole session. And I just want you to watch me. And that's a big component of behavior skills training. And have them just watch you. And that would get on, because there's a lot of great points in this question. Positioning, prompting, redirecting, like some little things, even on like where, you know, the staff is supposed to sit, make a big difference in those group learning settings. So I would lean into things like that as opposed to a video, because then you can really customize it for your group and exactly what your kids need. All right, question number 8, and actually this kind of leads into behavior skills training. I'm currently reviewing videos on behavior skills training and how to collect frequency data, particularly in relation to mastery of a skill. I'm particularly interested in second and third graders and what behaviors or skills would be useful to teach in a classroom setting. Regarding family life, could these techniques be effective in addressing behaviors around, for example, sibling rivalry? Do you have examples, or how would you define mastery criteria in these contexts? And do you have a list of commonly taught skills such as taking turns, waiting, sitting still that you would use to guide your teaching? Any insights would be greatly appreciated. So I like this idea of using behavior skills training and kind of looking at data collection and skill mastery on these kind of developmentally appropriate norms in relationship to school-based and family-based behaviors like taking turns and sibling rivalry. Let's first kind of address this thing of mastery criteria, because I really like talking about mastery criteria, and I think this has come up a little bit. With these types of behaviors, sibling rivalry, waiting, taking turns, things that are really developmental components of adolescence, of childhood, the mastery criteria is a tricky thing to match or to set, because the mastery criteria is not like 100% mastery, or like we will wait like, you know, perfectly, whatever. Like, because these are things that in neurotypical children are part of development, right? Sibling rivalry and having these types of behaviors is, you know, totally a part of youth and a part of having a sibling. And issues with taking turns and waiting is also a part of just growing up as well. So I would kind of turn to, when it comes to having this list of skills, I would almost kind of turn to executive functions for this. That kind of popped in my head when I was reading this list, because a lot of these are in relation to executive functions. When I think of sibling rivalry, that would be issues with emotional control. That would be issues with time management and flexibility. That would all play a role in sibling rivalry. Taking turns and waiting, all of that, that's all executive functions. So I would almost go to executive functions for kind of creating this like list of commonly taught skills. In the executive functions masterclass, I have some cool skills progression lists that a school-based BCBA in Connecticut helped me make. And those are awesome. And those are broken up actually by grade. And those, I think, would really align with kind of what this question is asking, these like home and school-based skills. And they're actually broken up into home and school. And now let's think about this idea of like behavior skills training. And so behavior skills training is we explain, we model, we practice, and we give feedback, and we can definitely teach and give that direct feedback of, you know, the executive function skills through behavior skills training. That's really in the course what we talk about. I add a really strong visual component to instructing executive function skills, because visuals are something that we can completely fade our prompts from. You know, visual prompts can be used without us. We can remove all adult support. So I add a really strong visual component, but when we teach that visual component, we could use the behavior skills training framework. We can explain how to use the visual. We can model how to use the visual. We can watch the student use the visual and then give feedback. So when we're providing that instruction and fading our prompts, we could absolutely use behavior skills training. And I love, love that idea. All right, so we covered 8 questions, everything from staff training to lamination to behavior, all from the Autism Helper app. So if you haven't downloaded it, download it. We've had it up for, I think, gosh, 4 years, 5 years, a while. So exciting. It's fun. I love that it's just super easy. You can have it on your phone. If you're in any of our courses, it's great to be able to, like, you know, watch some of it or ask any questions. You can really, like, fit in a little bit of it when you're like waiting at the car wash. You can watch part of the executive functions masterclass. That's super cool. I owe you a few links in the show notes. I'm going to add all of those. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.